Ha. Okay, what a great assembly, what a great assembly. Many people bringing great medicine at this solstice. And a particular shout out to Rebecca and Scott Kramer on 12/21/21. It's their 21st wedding anniversary and they're spending it with us. Yeah, so very wonderful. And Susanne Nathans and the magic of effective dedication and everybody bringing their unique magic. So we begin with Muti. Muti from the Sangomas of South Africa. Muti means power and healing. True power is that which heals. We don't source power, we invite it in. So this is coyote hair from ancestor Stella Coyote and a little bit of cannabis and tobacco. And we go, oh, spirit of the liberating trickster, quickening in each one of us this night. Open the path that by our dedication we may magnetize opportunities to be danced into place where we can do the most good and have the most fun and contribute our gifts to the community at this time of dire beauty. Wow, okay, there we go. So by the miracle of telepathic suffusion, we all have that. And then, but wait, there's more. So there's another kind of muti called umpepu. And this was actually grown for me by the astrologers Sangomas in South Africa, and they said it's a powerful medicine. And they said if you meet with good-hearted people, you may share this. And this calls in the ancestors. Poof. So, the umpepu. So, we're all here. So solstice, the sun stands still. It is at its southernmost rising and setting, and it actually stays there, rising and setting at its southernmost spot until the 25th. So solstice and Christmas, all one thing, all one thing, absolutely. So yes, we are here to gather our wits as we are ready to compost and honor 2021, and here is our beautiful ally Amakela with Baraswayo. Anything you want to say about calling in Legba, our mind from so many
Yes,
places? Yes.
Barasuwayo is a song we sing to Alegba, who is the keeper of the crossroads. And so, when you get to a place where you have to make a decision, should I go this way or that way? You call on this particular deity to help you make the proper decision. So we ask Baba Alegba to open all the roads for us when we sing this song for him right now. Barasuwayo, Mama Kenya. Barasuayo, Mama Kenya. Echo dara Kenya irawo. Barasuayo, Mama Kenya. Echo dara Kenya irawo. Oh, I say.
Wow, so that is so good. And also feel free, even though we are telepathically cahooting and but nobody we're gonna throw many things into the cauldron, including self-consciousness in any restricting way. We wanna relax so that we have permission to undulate. We might wanna throw straight lines into the cauldron and ladle out curves, even the German scientists with the huge flood said, it might have been a mistake to channel curvy rivers into shallow, straight concrete channels. And it's like, you think, right? So
Tell them about
undulating.
spirals. Tell them about spirals, Caroline.
Tell them that spirals. Spirals are nature's way of resolving conflict, right? When opposing forces come together, spirals ensue. Hot smoke in cool air, cold cream in coffee, galaxies, and tornadoes, of course. And when I asked a mathematician, meteorologist ally, what do hurricanes want? He said, they want what we all want. They want peace. They're trying to take conflicting forces and move them to the North Pole, right? But the enormity of the storms, everything coming more, is the enormity of imbalance that we are here to address. And Michael Mann, stalwart climate scientist, said in climate mapping, they talk about wave resonance, wave reverent, and the undulation of the wave resonance. And part of the problem is that the undulations that are getting stalled. They're getting stalled. So undulating sucks the chi out of tyranny, right? And Sean, what was the wonderful thing you said about Wilhelm Reich and tight fascia?
Oh, that you can summarize the mass psychology of fascism as saying that fascism is a disease of tight fascia. When we
Yes.
pull, when we armor ourselves, we can't fit
Yes.
together.
So, yes, feel free again. Here we are undulating. So, let me just bring up a little brief of our guiding map. Here we go. All right. So, just for introduction fun, what we have here is the live action astrological chart of now. So, here's the Earth, and here's some of us in Washington, outside Washington, D.C. Hi there, hello. And when we began, 10 plus Leo was rising in the east. The only thing different from a more usual map is that on the left is east, on the right is west. But very beautiful. There's so much support. Thank goodness it's not just humans. Because when we began, 10 plus Leo was rising. There are metaphors for each degree of the zodiac, and that's a particularly wonderful one. Children swinging underneath the shade of a huge oak tree, the borrowed strengths of all nature spirit traditions reaching back into the past. And we go, yes, help, that's good. And Saturn here has just set below the horizon at 10 plus Aquarius. We're here for the Saturnalia, right? That's what this season, this time is called. And Saturn's image is contemplating an inspiration which could change one's life. The void before the creative fire is lit. We go, perfect, perfect solstice. Many of us may feel like we've been in the void, the creative void, awaiting the spark, which is what we invite in now. There was a powerful full moon, right? And then the moon was in Cancer, and now the moon is rising in the east in Leo, ceremony, that we can bring all this alive. And just a brief little few things that we'll be referencing. You don't have to, there'll be no quiz at the end, right? We have Venus and Pluto, the art form of grief, Venus descending into the underworld. She's been a fantastic, the star after sunset in the southwest, and she's just stationed to retrograde, to begin to sink lower in. So soon she'll be disappearing, from us, going to the underworld to gather what we need, the art forms of grief and the practicing of everything we know. And we go, ah, that's good. Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination, how a culture tells itself its own story is in our eighth house of ancestral download. All the myths that ever were or will be are here now. The myths and the animal emissaries are eager to emerge, to make contact. The symbolic enters into the literal because this is, the season of Capricorn is incarnational mystery. And there's a beautiful dynamic of the sun at zero Capricorn because the winter solstice was this morning at 11 a.m. East Coast time. So here's the sun at zero Capricorn making a quirky angle. 150 degree angle
Oh,
to the moon,
you just saw it?
up to the moon
Did
in
you just
Leo.
receive it?
I don't know who's talking. To the moon in Leo rising. And so it says this is not nothing we do, nothing here tonight, nothing in our lives. It's not performance, it's dedicated magic. There we go. So this thing and many other fantastic things. Uranus, trickster genius in Taurus. For the years, so crucial to us that we are willing to go backstage to remember our capacity for trance and negotiation. I just remember Edgar Cayce in the 1940s predicted that in the 1970s, the East Coast of America would be deluged by a great flood, and what we had was Watergate. Right. So for those, you know, to go backstage and go, oh, water, oh, fire, you know, oh, animals, we have really been a rogue, impolite species. May our species have manners again. Can we negotiate to make some of what's coming at us metaphoric rather than literal? Like, oh, this, yeah. The sun has a beautiful cooperative angle to Jupiter. Jupiter's setting in the west. Jupiter's image is butterfly emerging from chrysalis, emerging from dormancy into a larger dynamic. And we go, oh. And then Jupiter and Uranus are quintiled, 72 degree angle of irresistible eloquence available for all who attend this night. Irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we love. And my friend Sylvia recently said, the quintile, the 72 degree angle, is that, but it's also the capacity to open portals between worlds. And we go, oh, that's great. Jupiter and Uranus, for all of us, are our booking agents. Saturn's within all of us is our job of dedication this night, this time of dedication, as people have done for 25,000 years. Oh, literal and symbolic light of sun, come on in and illuminate this story, this painting, this writing at the back of the cave. This is the story our community wants to bring alive at this powerful time. And so Saturn within all of us, you know, the job is to dedicate to what? But Saturn doesn't need to figure out how. How is the last question. Jupiter and Uranus chime in and say, we'll do how. You tell us what. And we go, okay. So that's enough of that for the moment. So calling upon all of our allies, wonderful storyteller Gioia Timpanelli says one of the opening frames for Sicilian storytelling is there's five ways of traveling: walking, crawling, swimming, flying, and how we journey now. Woohoo, woohoo. So I'm handing the baton to Sean and the wild hunt.
So just about a mile and a half, 2 miles from my home, there's a little chapel that's dedicated to Our Lady of the Lakes. And across from the chapel, there is a grove of birches and pines that contains a statue of the lady. And neither the priest in the chapel nor the statue of the lady herself ask by what name you're calling her when you come to visit. And so I make offerings to Our Lady, who is the life of the land, who is the source of our sovereignty. And I go there often at twilight, and on the night of the full moon, snowstorm was coming in. And I didn't know whether I should brave the road or not. And then something told me that I needed to, and I already had apples to bring as an offering anyway. And so I went to the statue and I laid the apples at her feet. I lit a candle and I began praying in Irish, Shedavaha van Tirna, do Tirna Svarlat. Welcome and hail life to you, Lady. Your Lord is with you. And as I spoke those words for the 10th time, a stag of five tines walked out from the woods, and we stood and we watched each other for a long, long time. We bowed to each other. And then I sang to him in Irish, and he stood for a moment and listened, and then returned to the forest, and I returned home. So the stag is such an animal of this time of the year, one of the lords of the forest. And the great British witch Robert Cochrane said that the cipher of the roebuck in the thicket comes down to he is the hunter and the hunted and the hunt. And so it is with the road that opens across the stars, through the sky, along the Milky Way, right now, and the northern sky along that road rides the Lord of the Underworld, and before him the hounds of the wild hunt. And that Lord of the Underworld is one who has known what it is to be a living human, one who has known what it is to be dead, one who has known what it is to be a god, and one who has known what it is to be all the beasts of the forest and the field and the river and the lake and the sky. And so he rides forth antlered, and he rides forth to gather all the wandering souls, all the ones who have died since this time last year, the lost and confused ones, to gather them up, to lead them home. And along the way, sometimes he will amplify their voices, and we need so much for their voices to be amplified right now, and so many died this past year in ways that were not in the course of their life that would have been right and true, who died for reasons of violence and inequality that need to be addressed. And so he amplifies their voices on the wind, and our prayers added to that wind and added to those voices can help them to carry. But then he brings them all to the world below. And the Milky Way in the Irish tradition is mirrored on Earth by the Boyne, the Boan, the river of the great cow mother. And at the root of that river is the well from which all the waters of all the worlds flow. And so from it flows the river of stars that is the Milky Way above us, that is the path the dead ride this time of year. But also from it flow the earthly waters. And as those waters meet the ocean, they come to the mouth of the Boyne, Bruna Boyne, called in English Newgrange, where the ancient dead are buried. And are buried in such a way that every year for 5,000 years, when the sun shines on the morning of the solstice, the sunbeam goes into the deep chamber to wake their memories and to wake the memories of the stone people who surround them. And they are the ones whose wisdom included the knowledge of how to speak to the stone and the water and the wind and the earth, which is still available to us through that river of blood of life that flows forth from them through the generations. And they also knew how to gather light. The entire outward face of the tomb is covered with quartz crystals. And we know that quartz actually does hold light, does hold photons. And this, that the light of this world is being drawn to down to the other world to feed it, that what was to be reborn in this world because this world needs it, might be. And so this is the time when we pray for those wandering souls, that they be brought together with the ancient dead into their deep true rest, that they might become ancestors. But also when we ask the ancestors, who among you wants to come forth again and bring what you remember? Who among you wants to sing the songs that will awaken what we remember in our bones?
Right, and so Ami's going to sing a song in a moment and will guide us how to honor the dead, those we know, those not known. But I loved also what you said, Sean, just now and backstage, that we see the long ago dead, you know, emerging from the mist to welcome the recently dead, you know. And, you know, my great ally, Robert Bly, went backstage, and he hadn't spoken really much for 10 years. And and then Coleman Barks went to visit, And Coleman was doing a reading in Robert's living room, and he forgot one of his own verses. And without missing a beat, Robert filled in the verse and then went back into 3 weeks of silence. So we don't know what people are doing in the netherworlds. And we go, ah, but he was a great collaborative mentor. And as we cahooted through the years, he became kinder and spicier, right? Deep delving discernment with a kind heart. That's the best medicine we aspire to be spicy and see it. And he did get there, and I loved his high standards. And so Robert is one of the recently dead, and Maladoma Somei and Robert Farris Thompson and many people that we will, you know, known culturally, great cultural contributors, so many, and those we know personally, so many. So I hand it to you, Ami, to guide us.
Thank you. That was so beautiful. And actually, if we could continue calling in the ancestors that are related to us and those that we're inspired by, and place your hand on your heart and just pound it, and you can speak out their names while I sing this song. Ahumba Waori. Ahumba Waori. Awaofi. Awaumba. Leri omba, leri awo, woko egu, kawe, woko egu, kawe, all of our ancestors, ashe.
And from my now ancestor, Stella Coyote, actual coyote I lived with for 19 years, 2 months, 2 weeks, and 2 days, longest relationship I've had, right? Longest time of living with it. It's sort of like a Chinese fairy tale. But when her best friend in the world, the wolf dog, was dying and died, she taught me, she conveyed to me the difference between sentimentality and grief. And it was just this texture. She grieved deeply, but it increased her appetite for life. I'm going to live. Coyote grief, especially at this time right now, you know, the grief wants somewhere to go. It's a river, and it goes into our Saturnalia dedication to life. You know, we cannot live through the dead, but we can invite what we loved in them to gain expression through us. So, yes. And then we get to do many things by the power of our assembling here. I think, you know, being annoyed goes into the cauldron. Such a distraction. Such a distraction. Everybody can leave here no longer annoyable, right? We can be feisty, and we no longer do the work of the reality police by bespelling ourselves. Like people, when people say, I'm so sick and tired. No, 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 no. I'm so aroused by this, right? You know, no bespelling, bespelling and limitations into the cauldron. And Jason Starks, a wonderful person who died quite mysteriously, suddenly, a really authentic black man from Texas Channel, you know, but he said, if only, well, he said, you know, people give so much energy to advocating for their limitations, right? And we would to and fro, and we go, may it be that the energy we used to have invested in advocating for our limitations is now dedicated to our opportunities. And we go, oh,
yeah.
So we want to bring in spicy justice. I saw a witty thing here. Here we go. Right. So spicy justice. I think this is very darling. A Christmas Carol is the heartwarming tale of how rich people must be supernaturally terrorized into sharing. Right. So so I think that's a good idea. It's a feisty time, Wrathful Dakinis. Right. And it's got a little wicked humor, which makes it, you know, I think it's quite OK. Right, and you know, because the other day, Sean, I was saying, you know, did something get your goat? And but fortunately, Right. Saturn is our goat totem. I have a goat. We're all getting our goats back. That's right. And that's part of our gathering, too, is, you know, our goats might have gotten by collective or personal kerfuffles, right? But we see our goat coming back even friskier than before it got, right? And when our goat gets gotten, what that's from is racehorses, poor things, but they had a compensation. They had a best friend goat that was with them. And bad people before a race would get a horse's goat, leaving it all frantic, right? So it's a useful metaphor, because once we go, my goat got gotten, but look, here it comes with its little goaty eyes and its little hot breath in our hands, really useful. So there's our goat. But I said, what got your goat? And you said, Joe Manchin. And we go, yes, it's an interesting conundrum. We cannot mete out justice, but we can invite in appropriate whatever, because it's such a tight, interesting conundrum going right, one impediment. But that's also the Christmas Carol, and in many books like Doris Lessing's Shikasta, there are people, you know, at a moment where they're considering expediency and corruption or what they came to do, right? And we have many sleeper cells coming alive now, 1960s pattern, those who were born then, those who lived through then, those who are, you know, whatever, and many just coming alive going, what did we come to do? Wait a minute. But backstage, the spirits are like, remember what you came to do. And that is what this night is full of. Remember what you came to do. Do the ethical, dedicated mission thing. There you go. Yeah, and we put a coal in Joe Manchin's stocking and his whole crime family, bless their hearts. We're allowed to set in motion anything of which we would be the happy recipients. That's the ally etiquette. You know, may those abusing power be moved to a place they can no longer harm themselves by harming others. And we go, would I take that if I were abusing power? Sure. We're going to gather things to diaspora at the end, you know. And, you know, a big one, may it be that humans have an increasing empathic experience of the effect of their actions on others. And that's a big one to ask ourselves, am I willing to feel that every styrofoam cup, every goodness, every meanness, every whatever. And I think it's time for going, yeah, let's go. Let's have empathic experience of the effect of our actions on others in all of its many, many, many nuances. You know, when I hosted Starhawk on radio on Thursday, what we were talking about before the show was, I said, nuance and tolerance, you know, and then we both said together, the nuance and tolerance party, and we go, we're launching it, there we go. But Ami, you know, we said, well, who's the goddess of fierce, who's the, you know, kinned with the wrathful Dakinis, all the those who metabolize poison, you know, it's all mythic figures can be thought of as metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature. And so what metabolizes poison? In our gathering here, we have someone dedicated to the wrathful Dakinis, giving them their authentic original impulse. We track everything back to its liberating impulse before it got cute and prettified, because the wrathful Dakinis weren't pretty as represented in Tibetan Buddhism. They were beautiful. And they take the poison of anger and cook it into the tonic of wrath, fierce protection of life. And they take the poison of seduction and cook it into the tonic of magnetism, bring everything alive, right? And many more things. But Ami, you said when we asked you, what's an orisha for fierce, bringing it in? And you said,
I said Oshun. Yes. And you know, it's one of those things where it's like, usually it's like when you're talking about the cooking it into the fierceness and taking it away from the pretty and bringing it into the real, you know, usually Oshun is depicted as like sweet and just honey, but she's like honey, with a whole lot of cayenne sauce, honey. And so usually she's like singing, Yamileado, very sweet and gentle, all the while laughing, no matter the issue. But when it's time to be wrathful with righteous rage, she spins and the knives on her crown cut through the madness and handle the business. And she starts dancing fiercely and she breaks all the shackles and they all turn into bracelets. And the song that signifies this transition where they break and they do this dance move, it goes, Ite were were ni ta suo, ite were were, ite were were ni ta suo, ite were were ni ta ya, ucha gene wa ni ta uchun, teke teke ita ya, ite were were. Cheke, cheke, itaiya, the breaking of the chains. Cheke, cheke, breaking of the shackles and turning them into bracelets so you could dance freely and make noise and jingle and sing and dance. And that is spicy justice, honey. Mm.
Oof. All right. Be welcome in our homes and in our hearts, you know, something to be invited in. If we don't know what to do, invite in what does. It really is. That's trickster guideline number one. So anything we say this night really, you know, has a particular potency. So I have often told the tale of Dame Ragnall, the loathly bride, right, the queen crone. But it's she wants, especially with everything in the world coming in. So a brief retelling. It's at the heart of the Arthurian legends. And part of the Arthurian legends that Sean was bringing in is that it's on the winter solstice that the white stag leaps into the center of Arthur's court. And Arthur says, nature has sent an emissary that we must change our ways. You know, and each person must go into the forest where it is darkest for them and have an encounter with an animal emissary and make a sacred pact to partner with it. We go, ah. So, at the heart of the Arthurian legends is the tale of Dame Ragnall. So it happened that Arthur was hunting one day and he wounded a stag in a thicket and he took off his weapons and swords and waded in. And in the middle of the thicket was an old enemy over a real estate deal gone bad, quirkily. And the enemy says, now I'm going to kill you. And Arthur says, I'm unarmed. That would be most unchivalrous. And his enemy says, yes. I tell you what, I will give you a question and I will give you a year and a half to answer it. I will come back on the summer solstice following in court. And if you have the right answer, I will spare your life. And if you do not, I will cut off your head right then. And Arthur said, that's very kind. That's very wonderful. Great. What's the question? And his enemy says, the question is, what do women want? He's like, oh my. So all year and a half, they're talking to wise women and people and collecting post-it notes and scraps of paper. And he knows it's not quite it. And time is running out. You know, it's days before the appointment. You know, when into town, into court rides Dame Ragnall, and she's described as smelling like the sea at low tide, and she's got enormous tusks, and she's just way funky. And she comes to Arthur and says, I have the answer that will save your life. And he says, oh, thank you very much, that's great. She goes, no, in return, I will marry your nephew, Sir Gawain, the handsomest man in court. And Gawain goes, whoa, uncle, I'll do it, but let's try the other answers first, right? So the enemy arrives and they have all these other answers and the enemy is sharpening his sword. Nope, nope, nope. When finally all that Arthur has is the question that Dame Ragnall, the answer that Dame Ragnall whispered in his ear. So he whispers it into his enemy's ears, what women want most in all the world is happening. And his enemy goes, oh, my sister must have told you, and he disappears. So Guinevere thinks a small wedding would be nice, you know, but Dame Ragnall will hear none of it and wants a large wedding, and she's eating entire boars, and grease is pouring down her face, and she's exulting, and Gawain has betted almost everybody at court, and they're all like, oh, Gawain is so terrible. And they retire to the wedding chamber, Gawain and Dame Ragnall, and they're in bed, and she says, how about a little kiss, sweetie? And he summons all of his chivalry and goodness, and he goes, nay, I will do more than kiss, And he turns to her and sees that she is the most beautiful woman he's ever seen in his life, going, oh! And she says, your kindness has half released me from this terrible spell. And I can be beautiful as I truly am half of the day, either during the day with you in court appearances or alone with you at night. And Arthur goes, Gawain goes, oh my goodness, oh my. He says, lady, it is too great a decision. You choose. And she says, it's very moving. She says, you have completely released me. And I will be beautiful as I am all the time, because what women want most in all the world is sovereignty. Sovereignty given, sovereignty returned, and sovereignty given again. And it said that they made love time out of mind. And in court, they were like, what the hell is going on? You know, but they made love for weeks, right? And so it's a fabulous tale about kissing the hag, you know. And Ananda Kumar Swami and many people have written about it that, you know, Dame Ragnall is the land, you know, and the king or the nephew must wed the land, you know. And I hand it back to you, Sean, to talk about the king and the queen.
Yeah.
And the land, yeah.
Well, I think we need to begin by acknowledging that our modern English word king and our modern English word queen get assigned to these very ancient ways of being that had very little to do with what we think those things mean. And we can go back into the late Middle Ages in Ireland, the role of the ri, the role of the king, was threefold, was to be the one who would gather together the mind of the people so that they could discuss in assembly and make decisions. In times of threat, to be the one who would inspire all to step forth and do what needed to be done to defend the land, and to be the one who would wed the land. And the old sense of queen is the one who embodies the will of the land. And the old sense of king is the one whose life is dedicated to enacting the true will of the land. And Arthur's name, we have a bit of a cipher that hints. So Ard in both the Gaelic and Brythonic Celtic languages means high, as in exalted, as in, but exalted due to its true nature. Art has two meanings. It means stone, and the stone people are the old, old teachers who remember what the land has always known and always been. And the stones also mark the graves of the ancestors. And that also means bear, the one who goes into the cavern for one part of the year to listen to the dreaming of the world and then walks forth to manifest that dream in the rest of the year. And that initiation of wedding the queen often begins with her appearing in unexpectedly in terrifying form as the hag. In Ireland, it's often Maeve who will do this. So that's the other sovereignty goddesses, the other goddesses of the land will as well. And Maeve will appear to the king on the road as an old hag. And if he looks on her and perceives the beauty of who she truly is and kisses her not out of obligation or custom, but out of true love for the beauty that is that fearsome manifestation, then she will become beautiful to him. And the sovereignty that she shares will be conveyed to him as long as he will serve in the way that's true, and can be withdrawn at any time that he begins to dishonor her or dishonor the land that she embodies. And her name is also the word for mead and speaks of the honeyed scent and taste of that kiss and the beauty that comes in its transformation. And I relate her back to Omeve and the other sovereignty goddesses were the Tuatie, the people of the gods, the fairy people who had once been the early humans of Ireland who went north to learn the secrets and sailed back on the black north wind to bring the secrets back, to liberate the land. And when I think of who did they go? Well, go to on the north, the name of the lady and the word that means lady is Freya. And she was the one who knew the oldest mysteries. She was the one who brought the mead cup of sovereignty to those who would be sovereign in the world. And she is the one who taught the Volvas and the Sayers the true magics, and who taught Othin the magics. And her name, interestingly, goes back to an Indo-European root word that means love. But that word is also, we learn from David Graeber and David Wenbrough in The Dawn of Everything, that free and freedom, a freedom and free and friend all arise from that word. And they say that it's because you can only be a friend if you are free to enter into agreement. And so therein lies the nature of sovereignty, to be free to befriend all, and in befriending all, be in that right relation that allows us to be sovereign. And it's interesting that Freya is also known as a goddess of war, and many of the Irish goddesses of sovereignty, and especially the Morrigan, are often spoken of today as goddesses of war. But they all have other names and other aspects. The Morrigan's name is also Anand, which connects back to the Sanskrit word for bliss. And what we think of as warfare and we think of as their wrathfulness is actually just their fierce defense of their true sovereignty and their fierce love of the land and the people and their own honor. And so it's not that they are goddesses who seek battle, but rather that when sovereignty is challenged and when love is disrespected and when the land is defiled, they are not afraid to strike out in defense of what's vulnerable.
And then we were playing, you know, about autonomy and sovereignty. So for the longest time, autonomy is when we have our goat, our Saturn, right? Autonomy is a sacrament to inhale, as we've been doing, inhale our authority, you know, because to exhale our authority leads to authoritarian, right? So it's like inhaling, you know, our goat. So autonomy, it's like when I dance with, you know, I have some spiraling partners in social media. I keep a few complete crackpots to hone skills, right? Over, and the exit line that works really well going, may we all awaken tomorrow self-possessed rather than merely possessed, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody's fine with that. And then everybody goes and has a peaceful sleep, right?
That's great.
that's a good one. And so, yeah, autonomy and sovereignty. Autonomy is self, sovereignty is relationship. It's a Venus thing, and Venus in Capricorn, which is our autonomy, allows, but it's also relationship. So autonomy and sovereignty are just wonderful things to play with and incarnate this incarnational time. And I want to toss it back to you for the Pirate Queen and many things. But something also I've honored for years, but it wants to be spoken this night. The Mabinogion, the Welsh creation myths, kind of like the Welsh Arthurian legends, so powerfully intense and underworld and amazing, riveting, so the stories are very old, but they were gathered in the 10th century. But there is a moment where the elders get together and go, Uh-oh, the men just found out they have something to do with children, and things were going so well before this, and we can see what's going to happen. Women and children will become like property. Humans will lose not only kinship with each other, but with nature herself, until the earth might die. And then, at that point, some people will keep all the journey of their unique journey, but open once again into telepathic cahooting, or I don't know what the 10th century word was, but that's the gist of it. And we go, right. All the myths, everything's very concerned about us. All the myths, again, that ever were or will be are here, you know, eager to be invited in. So we feel, what is our affinity, you know, and to think of our lives as spiritual detective novels in which every affinity for a culture or a color or an art form or an animal or a quality of water is worthy of wonder and honor always, but now. You know, there are some things that are always true, but there are times when they're truer, right? And this moment, this powerful moment is so strong that way. You know, come on in, all that we need. We need against all odds. We need the trickster dynamic, the liberating trickster that comes alive in dangerous times. So there is no fixed future. And much of what passes for astrology out there, you know, might get my goat, but my goat comes back. So the astrology thing, oh, America's going into its Pluto return, so democracy will end. It's like, that is too lazy. That is so missing the point. There is no fixed future, you know. Chiron, little planetoid, who is the centaur mentor, is just stationed to go forward. The mentors are returning, and wonderful ally Deborah Felmuth, may she be praised, a year and a half ago said this beautiful thing that I keep always. She said, in the West, we think of the future in front of us and the past in back of us. Who cares? And you said, in the Middle East, it's the reverse. See, reversing water fluidity. Reversing is very interesting. She said, in the Middle East, it's the reverse. We are gazing at the past in front of us. The future is invisible behind us, and we are crafting the future by gazing at the caravan of our past mentors. I love this so much. It's such a good thing to take with all of us and go, right, you know, and to think of that. And so then to toss you many things, Sean, you know, and we're accumulating what we want to toss into the cauldron. And so as they arise, you know, we go, you know, the word privilege is so revelatory because it comes from prive lege, private law. And there we go. There we have it. So we're going to toss privilege into the cauldron, right? And ladle out, you know, sovereignty, equality, collaboration, ingenious compassion, all of those things. But right, so two things. One, the festival of misrule. Sean, you brought that up.
Yes, well, so, going, part of the reason, the original war against Christmas was waged by the Puritans because of the raucousness and the rebelliousness that the season brought forward. And the Christmas, solstice, Saturnalia have long been festivals of misrule, times when the order is inverted in order to kind of release the pressure building up in the culture. But it struck me this year that actually, because we've been inverted so for so long, we need to do a different kind of inversion, because we've had the festival of misrule already. We've had misrule for years and years. So what would be truly liberating at this time would be to flip that misrule over and have instead a festival of animist democracy.
Yes, absolutely. And maybe to help us, might you summon the Pirate Queen?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
I shall contextualize her briefly, though. And it does sort of go back to authority and sovereignty, because, or autonomy, which gives rise to authority, which is tied with authorship and sovereignty. And so Horrid Pierce, Patrick Pearse, was a young teacher of the outlawed Irish language in Dublin in the early part of the 20th century, part of the same circle as Yeats. And he was among the band of unlikely revolutionaries who, by taking over the post office, managed to eventually liberate Ireland. He set out to work with a lot of the old stories, a lot of the old myths, and to inspire people to embody what was right and true in those myths. And he would teach the young about the Fenians, the warriors who defended the wild and defended the poor. But among the myth, but among what he reached back to was also the way in which others had come forward in history to embody those forces. And one of the forces he really wanted to call back was that fearsome force of the sovereignty goddess. And she had come in human form in the 17th century as Granuaile, who the English called Grace O'Malley, who sailed her navy off the west coast of Ireland, fighting off the British. So calling the seeing this great war loving warrior who of the sea, when it came time to create a marching song for the people who were going to try to bring the land to freedom, he ended up writing a song that really was a spell invoking her. And the final verse, it says, "Should I live but one week more, let the God of miracles allow me to see Granuaile, the thousand warriors, drive out the invaders." But the chorus is Oro Shedabaha Waya. We welcome you home. There are two ways of saying welcome in Irish. One is Felcha, as in Caitmil Felcha, but the other is Shedabaha. And Baha is also in Ishka Baha, whiskey, the water of life. Baha is life. So Sheda Baha is not just welcome, it's to life. And so it was, in many ways, a direct summoning. And so the song, set to the tune of an old Jacobite marching song, says, "Hail, we welcome you home now that summer's coming." Oro Sheda Baha Vaya. Oro Sheda Baha Vaya. Oro Sheda Baha Vaya. Anishar Hatan Torik.
We know that tune. That's great. That's great. That's wonderful. We were going to speak of Dion Fortune and the spirit of the land, and let me set it up for you too, which is, so Dion Fortune, a mentor of mine, you know, back in the 40s, profoundly cultivated and quirky ritualist, and the British government engaged her and the ritualists of Britain to do ritual magic to protect Britain from the Nazi invasion. So I was dusting off this book last year going, I think we need this now. And we had an election magic council that was last October, November, because we knew it was going to be sketchy. but the parts of the book that I have kept, you know, is she said, it was essential to our work, and they were doing it by mail. They were doing it by mail, right? We have Zoom. So many ways to Kahoot. She said, it was essential to our task to maintain an atmosphere of tranquility in our homes, in our home work temples. Otherwise, how could we have hoped to have been a nucleus of stability for the nation's soul? It's like, oh, now we're talking. Vocabulary upgrade. Anything for which we have a name, we have a relationship. And we go, oh, that's great. And she said, part of, you know, was our practices, you know, but part of it was our discipline, here comes Saturn again, our dedicated discipline to the desirable outcome. And she's writing when the bombs are falling and it looks bad. You know, she was like, you know, no, back, steady, steady. And she said, when you're working with vision, she said, it's not so much prophecy. It's more like you are standing on a cliff overlooking the sea and therefore can see a boat coming into shore sooner than those on shore. I love that. So what, how shall we, that, you know, I saw three ships come sailing in is a wonderful Christmas song, right? On Christmas Day in the morning. So what are those three ships, not the Columbus thing, what are those three ships we want to come in on Christmas morning, part of this? You know, what shall we see that we can see as we are all now on a cliff edge overlooking the sea? You know, what are those boats, you know, that are coming in? And you'd said, because that's the part of the book that I paused on, and then you said that Dion Fortune was instructing everyone to connect with the spirit of the land.
Yes, and someone who's done some beautiful work on this is Paul Weston, the great psychedelic and occult historian of Glastonbury, right, and a brilliant psychic quester and wonderful storyteller. And through listening to some of his recordings that I learned this history. But so Dion Fortune had a strong tie to Glastonbury and to the whole mythos of Glastonbury Tor as the seat of Arthur's spiritual authority. And when she was trying to figure out how to defend Britain from the Nazi onslaught, what she decided she needed to do was to wake the spirits of the land and of the people. And so she devised postcards with images on them that invoked the Glastonbury landscape and some of the symbolism of its mysteries. And she would send them out every week. And people would agree that at this period of time, we are all going to sit with this postcard. We are going to focus our intention on animating this image. And so, inspired by that, I've tried to make a practice of, when I've been spending too much time just talking about what we're trying to dispel, bringing the images of the old places that hold the memory of how to be and how to live so that we might reanimate the spirits that dwell there.
Yes. A friend says, we worship whatever we spend our time on. Mm-hmm. A useful Saturn reminder, you know, our dedication. And, you know, the egregores, the animating, because I remember her guiding us. And so last year, when I was doing an election magic council, I said, well, in the spirit of Dion Fortune, she would have people animate a desirable symbol. And I go, the Statue of Freedom on the Capitol, that's a good one. So we did, you know, and we did some wonderful things. You know, we're just dusting off our skills going, oh, it was a good start. We want to keep practicing. This is a time where we dedicate to what we want to practice this year and to come in, you know, the mentors and guides who know more about these things. But we did, you know, the Statue of Freedom on top of the Capitol. So every time you see the Capitol on the news, the Statue of Freedom is up there, and she is very trippy. She's wearing an eagle on her head. Her whole story is fantastic, you know. And there's only one, and she's got a sword, right, a sheathed sword and justice. So we were feeding her. And the only other Statue of Freedom in America is on top of the Georgia State Capitol in Atlanta. Yes. So we were, and for her, like in Ami's Oshun, her sword is unsheathed, right? And so we were making a little cornmeal passageway from the Statue of Freedom on top of the Georgia Capitol to the Statue of Freedom on the U.S. Capitol, you know, nimma, 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 nimma. And then, you know, we're not going to us off, we're elected, right? And on the day that the returns came in for us off, January 6th, right? And we were going, come on, it's freedom, freedom. And we all, might have been worse if we hadn't been doing that. We don't know. We don't presume. No hubris. No causality. Experiment. 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 Right. But we're definitely inhaling back. You know, the antidote to dementors is mentors. Right. Mm-hmm. So they're great. So inhaling back. January 6th, one of my favorite days. Right. It's 12th night. It's Epiphany. It's when the Magi, the wise beings, the astrologers arrived. Right. So this year, let's see that, right? Again, the power of atmosphere, you know, what we're here doing, you know, even in our quirky experimental Zoom, but it's magic enough. You know, Dion Fortune would use Zoom. It would have been so much more convenient. Here, look at this, right? so we love that, you know, and seeing Neptune Dreams, Vision, Imagination says, the backstage realm of atmosphere is the first place of influence, you know, and that's part of what we're doing here, you know, and spiraling out our diaspora, which is to contribute to group mind. As Dion Fortune said, the essence of ritual magic is to spiral into group mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance. And we get to add many things tonight, and nuance, and humor, and wit, and dark insight with a kind heart, and all of those things into group mind to create the atmosphere conducive to the desirable. These skills, experimentally stirring, we want, you know? And so another great being who died this year is Robert Ferris Thompson. And I have his book, Flash of the Spirit, always beside me. And I think it speaks well of him that I've used that book for decades, and I never said he was a great keeper of cool. Now, Saturn is really the intelligence of cool. And our word cool, popularized by jazz musicians in the 40s, comes from a Yoruba word, kula kula. And it meant completely responsible. Cool meant completely responsible. The cool guy was dedicated, or Gaia, was dedicated to collective well-being. The cool musician was just the drummer, the drum, the divine, nothing else, right? And in Yoruba, like as in English, it means temperature. So the Yoruba say language is magic. To literally, like now, imagine our heads as cool, moving all the heat in the head to the heart, which is where it belongs. Cool head, warm heart, opposite of road rage, right? Hot head, cold heart, right? Cool head, warm heart allows all of us to enter into hot reactive situations as agents of spiraling resolution, inviting in the resolution in some way. So that's great. So Robert Ferris Thompson, thank you for your great work. And here's something he said in a Rolling Stone interview. He said, those people stand like giants in teaching us how to live. There is a moral voice embedded in the Afro-Atlantic aesthetic that the West can't grasp. Yet, they don't see the monuments, just barefoot philosophy coming from village elders. But the monument is a grand reconciling art form that tries to morally reconstruct a person without humiliating them. He continued, these are the canons of the cool. There is no crisis that cannot be weighed and solved. Nothing can be achieved through hysteria or cowardice, right? We're going to throw reactivity into the cauldron, ladle out responsive, right? You must wear and show off your ability to achieve social reconciliation. Step back from the nightmare. It is a call for parlance, for Congress, and for self-confidence. Thank you. Thank you, Robert Ferris Thompson. So, Ami, we were thinking, yes, there, thank you.
Love that. Throw the notes. Woo! That's like right.
Leaves and they're
that's right, comp- that's right. They're, we all know. That's how you keep it cool.
They're self-composting into actuality. May it be so. So the Orisha, who's very cool, you know, to conjure wise leadership in our hearts, and in the world, right, as a reflection, is Obatala.
Yes, and Obatala is, his symbol is all white, keeping everything chill and calm with cotton. And you know, the way that some of his symbology is the snake, the way that you dance with the snake is to be extremely focused and very, very calm. And that's how you move with Obatala, with calmness and slowness. And my particular word of Obatala is Obamaro, which is the ancient of ancients. So I have to go super slow when I'm dealing with him. And you know, the symbol of amethyst and all those things, those ways that we kind of cook down and get to the place of ancient slowness. The snail is also Obatala's symbol. And so we sing most songs to Obatala with very slow like this. Baba fururu, ere ere oro, Слово конье не элегиво. Эй, фа, обати васао. Эриво, эре, бати вао. Энуае, яуалоро. Batala ta wini wini bebe gude o bola inya bebe de.
Ah, may Obatala, may he suffuse our being. Ah, right, thank you. Yes, to be born in our hearts and in our communities this time, this powerful time of dedication. So part of the choreography that, you know, is only meaningful if it resonates in our hearts. But let me just say, when I speak of the briefly of the planets, they represent living qualities of intelligence that reside within us and connect us to the world, and they like being invoked. So Saturn, Obatala, within each one of us, be present. And I should briefly, you know, just pay homage in case there's a few people who have not heard about Christmas as an Amanita Mushroom Festival. We just need to bring this up because it's so useful. I first heard it from James Arthur. Hey there, out there in the ancestor world. And Jack Herrera, great cannabis guru, hosted them on radio. And the story goes like this. At first I thought they were like, oh, and we went out afterwards and I thought they just had it, but no, Amanita mushrooms everywhere, in books and things and the story, anyway. So in the north, the shaman dresses as the sacrament. Amanita mushrooms are red and white and they grow like little packages under fir trees. And reindeer really do love to eat them. Even my little Playmobil magic waterfall set comes with deer and magic mushrooms for the deer to eat. That's okay. So the deer love to eat the Amanita mushroom. And humans will drink the reindeer piss because it filters out some of the more dangerous alkaloids. And the deer are so crazy about Amanita that they will lap human piss that has Amanita in it, going more, more, can't get enough. Mm-hmm. And the experiences of flying, so they fly to the North Pole, the center of all wisdom. You know, and everyone's got, you know, high snow and the entrance to their house is the smoke hole. So they gather great wisdom in the north and they bring it down into each hearth and each heart so that wisdom can bloom again. So I love that when we drive around and
that is so gorgeous. I did not know that at all. That's beautiful.
And I love that in the Irish tradition, some of Erin Rowan Laurie's scholarship points to the fact, the idea that the Amanita might have been responsible for the fire in the head, the imbas, which it was the poetic frenzy that the prophet poets entered into. And I think about Obatala cools the head, and the Amanita brings the fire.
Yes.
And what happens when heat and cool dance? We get the spiraling winds that could bring transformation.
Come on, Sean, bring it.
nothing can stop us now. That's great. That's very wonderful. And again, as we throw, you know, so many distractions into the cauldron, approval, disapproval, really, the gods don't care. Our approval, disapproval, you know, are we willing to work with it? Magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything. And one of the things I know in our encouraged and ongoing introversion is that the question, what's going to happen, is completely, useless and irrelevant and passive. That which makes us passive is toxic, right? What's going to happen to us? No. What's available with which to cooperate? And there's so much generosity. It's like, as Robert Bly said in just the little fragment in one of his last poems, you know, here we are, you know, to receive the generous proffering and grace proffered to us, who have kept our small boats afloat when so many have gone down in the storm. It's like, right? This commerce between the living and the dead. And we feel that kinship with the many boats that have gone down in the storm, right? But we are, nonetheless, we are here, breathing here. If we're on this call, we're breathing. And therefore, you know, available to dance. Right, and so annoyance and approval, disapproval into the cauldron. So, you know, when we drive around and see the two bright lights, we go, they're just trying to get high. They're just trying to get high. It's mythological archaeology. Underneath everything, go to the deep thing, you know, and also certainly go out into the woods. So we are lucky. You know, Jupiter and Uranus are quintiled. They are the booking agents. Part of our gathering here now to keep it rippling forth is by dedicating inwardly now and this whole time period, what is our manifesto of dedicated devotion? The inward dedication strengthens our outward signal. And if we entertain the possibility, as proffered by the great everything pulsing design, that we're moving into a field of enhanced synchronicity, then we get to say, well, if I entertain that possibility, what's the quality of what I want to connect with and whom, who shares a mission, who shares a thing, who brought what, you know, to this Renaissance council of necessity? So and so Jupiter, Uranus are quintiled, and they are lucky. There was a academic study of luck done at Cambridge University, and they pretty much proved that luck increases when we run the fuel of curiosity and generosity. Oh, look, I just found this. Oh, good to meet you. Let me buy you a drink. Oh, you're funding my project. They found that, right? And so we're encouraged to run on the fuel of curiosity and generosity, which, as this riptide of science and folklore, you know, science proving folklore, and our buddy Paul Stamets, mycologist, saying that, you know, Johns Hopkins is pretty much proving that the psilocybe magic mushrooms used for ever by humans, right, as a sacrament of kinship, that they calm down the amygdala, the reactive thing, the annoyed thing, right, calm that right down, increase cooperation in all the regions of the brain, we can think micro and macro, and encourage curiosity, confidence, and kindness. Stamets says those are leadership qualities. Those are leadership qualities that were. So,
and the British researchers found that in people being treated for depression with psilocybin, they showed an increased affinity for nature and a decreased tendency towards authoritarian attitudes. And it strikes me that, you know, one of our great psilocybin mushrooms is the Liberty Cap. And that's also the cap that freedom wears. Yes. And so if that cap on Liberty's head can be the Liberty Cap mushroom, then it reconnects to the mycelial weaving of the mind of the forest and becomes true sovereignty.
All right, well, let's animate that now, team, right? The Liberty Cap spores spiraling through the Capitol. There we go.
Yeah.
That's right. And I like that in Aramaic, the word evil that translates as evil in Aramaic is unripe. And as collaborators, as symbolic collaborators, we go, well, what do you do with something unripe? You put it in a brown paper bag. So I think we should imagine a giant brown paper bag full of psilocybe mushroom spores descending over Congress. There you go. Ripen and be available to beauty. Ripen and be available to beauty. So there's many backstage trickster benefits. So we go, what do we want to connect with and with whom? What is that quality? You know, wonder that there's a great available kindness being offered to us, that wonder attracts synchronicity. You know, so it's like, I wonder what I, okay. There's a call and response. And part of why I have an unabashed love of Christmas and the whole solstice, everything, is the atmosphere, you know, and for 25,000 years, you know, the atmosphere is a kind of tangible, sparkly magic, kind of psilocybe mushroom quality. It's what the psilocybe mushrooms want to guide us to, that atmosphere of beauty and pattern and kinship and our availability. Right. When I was sort of wrestling the word vulnerable from somebody who's like, I found the vulnerable parts of myself and I showed the vulnerable parts to my friend. And I go, you know, vulnerable means woundable. It's from battle, you know, and it's kind of kinky as a relationship virtue. And you did get huffy, like, and he goes, no. And I go, no, etymological dictionary means woundable. And he was like, well, what would you suggest instead? And I go, it's not the same. But how about available? I revealed the available parts of myself, and my friend revealed the available for play parts of him or herself. And I go, well, I'm very happy with that, right? So, you know, because Saturn and Uranus in cahoots, we have the last of their squares. It was, you know, February and June, and December 24th is the last Saturn-Uranus square this year. It's like, ugh. Every an incentive to experiment to create greater beauty on every level, like, oh, annoying thing the neighbor does, oh, let me paint a wall and the thing, you know. So I like Uranus part of us saying, we are big gods dancing with you all. We don't care what you do. Mm-hmm. We care the manner in which you do it, that it come from freedom and choice rather than fear. And then whatever you choose to do, it's gonna fly. So I love that. And so all impedimental be an incentive to experiment, right? And it's the great ancient chant, precedes, there we go. It also goes with got to, outsource Saturn, creates procrastination, get to. You know, we get to collaborate and save the world. Got to. Right. So it's our trickster. May our trickster, playful, available self be born from our, you know, this time welcoming. And just the last, I think it's very witty that Saturn and Uranus are squared right before family dinner, 24th and 25th, because it insists on sovereignty and equality at the table. We go, that should be fun. That's what a good idea that is. So the Saturn in Aquarius is the form of how we gather squared. A 90 degree angle is an assignment to get illusorily estranged principles to dance together in us and in the world. Uranus, nature's evolutionary trickster genius in Taurus, participatory animism. Everything that Sean and Ami and in all our hearts that we're bringing forth, you know, and the experiment. You know, when I began living with Stella Coyote, hosted Lakota Elder on the radio, I keep this with me always, and he said, you know, we Lakota did not hunt alone. Those gifted could go into a reverie trance backstage, and they could broker a working alliance with the wolves and coyotes, and we would all hunt together for a season. And if you want to destroy a culture and destroy the earth, forget this, or convince people it doesn't exist. Right? So stirring in us this experiment to be able to go backstage as Sean does, you know, and as we do, you know, into a reverie and go, coyote, trickster, wheel and deal. But you got to put stuff on the table. If we do this, then how about that? How about that? No, what? It's like buying a carpet in the Middle East. You go, no, and have a cup of tea. If we do this, I know this from Coyote. Coyote is completely transactional and telepathic. You know, if I give you this, can I have my glove back? No, how about two of those? Okay, we got a deal. If we honor water, can we have fewer floods? Okay, you want more? Okay, I think this is a realm of fruitful wondering and wandering. And there's an eager reciprocity, you know, and we don't expect, expectation's the partner of disappointment, right? But we are willing. And Johannes Trickster says to each one of us, you know, I'm going to connect each person who's available to the coolest thing possible, inwardly and outwardly. And all I want, you know, now we're off brooding in autonomy, solitude, is a gesture of available willingness, going, we're willing. And the backstage goes, they're hoisting their sails. We're on. This is a between worlds adventure. Otherwise, it's hopeless, right? But with magic, right? So Saturn, Aquarius, Square, Uranus, and Taurus, we know the description that all structures not based on nature's ingenious design are collapsing. You know, greed, condos built on sand, you know, no healthcare thing, you know, but the energy invested in collapsing structures is available, liberated, this is the death thing, right, for rededication. And that's what this time is for. The things that's dying, we have the energy to invest into these other structures, as and to be inviters to the hopeful story, as Alan Watt says, no clings that are. We want to be inviters. Come on over. Come on over. Come on over from the thing that's going down to this irresistible. We need everyone, you know, quality. You know, so it behooves us to consider our dedications. And to entertain the possibility that we're entering into a field of redemptive trickster booking agency, you know, that we are the molecules with which the big story speaks to itself through the agency of synchronicity. And we go, oh, it's heartening, you know, to come out of our, you know, to have team, to have a team. You know, I think it's a strong yearning. And there's another generosity that betwixt Neptune and Pluto and Venus, the mythic into the actual. They say, you provide the metaphors and the music, we'll provide the molecules. So we provide music and metaphor, and backstage goes, fair enough, we'll give you the molecules. Whatever we place on our altar will magnetize its fullness, right? So we love that. So team, we're going to do our traditional thing, even though we're, you know, usually with a live audience, you know, it's the longest night. Wait, let me reach for my cauldron here. Right, here is the cauldron. We're going to, so usually, you know, it's the chant that I learned from Starhawk in 1982. I think it was a room full of naked people. But it was the longest night, the wheel is turning, what will we give to the night, right? And so usually people shout out, you know, whatever, but we'll just do it together here. So Ami and Sean, shall we just go, the longest night, the wheel is turning,
what will we give to the night?
We go. All right. How about privilege? Privilege.
Privilege.
Look, I have a death rattle. I have a death rattle.
That's fabulous.
Privilege is gone with the night.
Right, I think so. I had the hairstyle when I was a child. Pull the death rattle back up again. Little Afro pom poms all over my head.
This would be a very trippy rattle to give to a baby going, heavy baby. Okay. All right, that's really good. So the longest night. The wheel is turning. Non-useful dread. Non-useful dread is gone with the night. All right,
the night.
Other things, the longest night, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night?
Shame.
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 Shame is gone with the night. The longest night, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night? Corruption.
Corruption.
Corruption is gone with the night. There we go. The longest night, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night?
Blame. Blame will we give to the night. Lame.
All right. Lame. Lame. An abdication of responsibility for dreaming the world into being. Okay, that's good. All right. And then shall we just do everybody in your own private home? We'll just do one and you just shout out everything.
Shout it out.
All right. The longest night. Corruption and shame and terrible things. And the 5-year fear planner. Oh, there we go. The 5-year fear planner. There we go. The fears we fear that we're going to fear far into the future. All that's gone. Excellent. So good enough. And then, you know, it's a magic cauldron. what's in here? What are we ladling out? Nuance and tolerance. Nuance and tolerance. There we go. Okay. And then what else is in here? Are we ladling out? Reciprocal altruism. Mm. And the infinite game. All right, there we go. All right. Oh, look what's in here. The Supreme Court has 13 justices. Yes. All right, that's excellent. All right, curiosity, confidence, and kindness, of course. There we go.
Yes.
Sovereignty, of course.
Yes.
Wait, there's more, but wait, we have more things in here. It's the thing. Right, so we are so blessed with so many presents. This is a piece of wood that was in the middle of everything burned in right next to my friend's house in Santa, you know, north of Santa Barbara, California. You know, a survivor stick. That's good.
Yes.
Thank you. All right, and then we have witches, bitches, and hoes tonic for Edgewalker. the Inquisitions are gone with the night. Yeah, there we go. Inquisitions are gone with the night. There are still terrible things going on, but safety lies in everybody coming out. There we go. Okay. So witches, bitches, and hoes tincture. Oh, look, it's windfalls of wherewithal for everybody. There we go.
Yeah.
Right. And look, fast luck. I think that would be useful. Fast luck from the Lucky Mojo. And fiery wall of protection. Boundaries are good. That's good. So that we can be safe. You know, and High John the Conqueror route. You know, do you want to say a little bit about High John? Anybody? Ami, do you want to say anything about High John?
I think you've got it. Tell them about High John, Carolyn.
Well, High John is the great trickster redeemer of the South. Zora Neale Hurston wrote a fabulous essay about him. And the crucial thing about the trickster heroes, you know, what is different about the trickster heroes, the Venusian heroines, is they're interested in liberating the entire circumstance, the entire atmosphere. Liberate the women, liberate the men, liberate the land, liberate even the tyrant, not counting on it, but willing. But certainly the entire circumstance. You know, Dionne Fortune said, people were always asking her in the middle of the war, when will the war end? And she said, can't tell you when. I will tell you how. It will end when the conditions that gave rise to it are resolved. So when will the pandemic end? It will end when the conditions that gave rise to it are resolved, and the conditions that gave rise to it are humans despoiling the earth. It's the last 5 minutes of the really great movie Contagion. It just shows forests coming down, animals fleeing, bat poops on pig, pig slaughtered, brought into Chinese restaurant, chef wipes bloody hands on apron, steps out front to shake hands with Gwyneth Paltrow, and we're off, right? So all of the, you know, distracting kerfuffle, it's like, go deeper. The thing that resolves this is human manners and a willingness to humbly cooperate with nature's guiding genius.
And conglomerations.
It's the only way to go of all ancient and biomimicry traditions, absolutely. So, well, there. All right. So now we're. Oh wait. That's right. And just a brief public service announcement, just for the fun of it. And Sean and I have just decided to start a weekly council in midwinter that takes us to Equinox. So we'll let you know. But let us know if you're interested in such a thing.
All Yay!
Right. So then we have our. All right. We've inhaled the year. We've inhaled the year. We've thrown out the demons, right? And now we want to exhale and waft out blessings. And Ami's going to guide us with Oya Day. And just a little bit as Ami sings, and maybe you have something to say before you sing. But just inhale Saturn, Jupiter, expand, right? And feel free to undulate. Or in your mind's eye, at least, you know, or just whatever. But so to pull in, as you know, and you can tell us about Oya Day, you know, and then we want to spiral forth blessing into the world. There we go.
Yes, and Oya is the spiral. She's the tornado. She's the whip. She's the one that screams through the cemetery and wakes the dead and brings the life and lets everybody know what's going on. And so this is Cal and Casey's theme song, Oya Day. Oya de, oya de leo, oya de re re te re, oya de, oya de leo. Everybody dance, here we go! Oya de re re te re, oya
Thank you. 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 Thank